Welcome to the first episode of A Very Local History. My name is Ollie.
And my name's Louis.
And in each episode of this podcast, we'll be delving into the history of a different area of London.
Yes, we'll be discussing how that area has evolved over time, what it was like then versus what it's like now, picking out some historic points of interest which illuminate its past, and hopefully uncover some things about London that you may not already know.
Now, we are not professional historians. But we are two born and bred Londoners who share a passion for exploring the city and learning more about it.
Yes, indeed. Now, despite what we told you, for our introductory episode, we're going to do something very different. We're going to take the entire 2,000-year history of London and blitz through it over the course of one, maybe two, Lord knows, maybe even more episodes.
Who knows? We shall find out the joy of live podcasting.
Can you tell we're doing it on the fly?
Except obviously it's not live.
So 2,000 years of history, condensed for your pleasure, to give us a bit of an overview and a bit of context for our London podcast.
It's a lot of history. Should we get going?
Yeah, let's get going.
Okay, then. So most settlements start by water. So I think we need to start with the Thames. Old Father Thames. London grew up around Old Father Thames. And way back when, the Thames was very different from the urbanized river we know today. It was a huge tidal river, much, much wider than we know today, with high ground next to it and a shallow, narrow crossing point, which could be bridged. And so it presented itself as a perfect place to set up shop.
Yeah. So very real geographical considerations meant that at the early stage of London's history, you had people settled in this area.
Tribes.
Yeah, tribes. There's archaeological evidence that you had Iron Age tribes in this area.
So Iron Age, just so I'm straight, is...
Pre-Jesus.
I'm going to start using that as an expression of pre-Jesus.
But the archaeological record, which throws up things like shields and helmets, decorative Celtic pieces of art that you've probably seen or maybe seen images of from the British Museum, for example. These are the signs that we have that humans were existing in and around the area of the Thames and what would one day become London prior to the arrival of the Romans and their naming of the site, so to speak.
So you mentioned the Romans there.
Yeah. Yeah.
43 AD is the date that is often given as the Romans' arrival in this area.
Yes, they come along after some tentative forays over the channel.
Julius Caesar came along,
scoped it out
and was like, actually the weather's a bit shit, I'm going to go home.
Yeah, I think he might have also been met with some quite ferocious resistance at times as well.
Yeah.
And so periodically, or a couple of times, kind of came back, bigger and bigger forces, expeditionary forces as they would have been, you know, kind of considered. And in 43 AD, after a bit of that, he comes over and a military camp is established on the site of Londinium, as they would call it one day.
Yeah.
Now, this is what we see as the kind of establishment of the settlement of London. But I think you might have an alternative idea.
Well, I'm looking at you with a raised eyebrow there because, you know, you're so sure about the Romans founding London. Everyone seems so sure about it. But there is an alternate take.
Really, which one are we going to go
Which with? Is the legend of Brutus. Yeah? Brutus of Troy. He's the descendant of the Greek goddess Aphrodite. You know her?
Uh-huh.
And the Trojan hero Aeneas. And basically, the story goes, he leaves Troy in search of Albion, which is the old name for Britain.
That's actually true.
What?
That's a bit that's true.
What? Whoa. Are you suggesting? Anyway, look, let me just get back to Brutus.
Sorry, carry on.
And so he's in search of Albion. He gets here. He finds, when he gets here, that the island is inhabited by a small number of giants. led by the sort of big boss giant called Gog Magog. Why are you laughing? Come on.
You'll excuse me.
And he sorts them out, puts them to the sword. And so with the land now free of giants, decides to build a new city worthy of Troy. And he travels around looking for a good spot. Eventually, he finds a suitable place by the Thames. And he establishes the city that he wants to be known as New Troy. And declares it would become one of the great cities of the world. So... you say Romans, I say Brutus, and also I'm backed up by Geoffrey of Monmouth, who we have to thank for that story.
Famous pseudo-history that he wrote.
So you, listeners, you can decide how London was founded.
So the inclusion of gods and giants means that I think just for the sake of argument, we're going to go with the Roman narrative.
You have no imagination.
You're a
Philistine, you know that?
Clearly.
All right, fine. We'll stick with the Romans then.
Yeah, let's. At least just for the sake of argument, as I say. There's some archaeological evidence that we have to go on for that, so we'll go with it. So we've set up a military camp in London, the Romans, and it's going to grow into quite a significant commercial centre. But it's not without its hiccups.
No, we in the history of London... it is sacked and pillaged.
Pretty hard, yeah.
Which is something that's going to come up again and again.
It will, definitely. Boudica, Boudicea.
I never know how you say that.
Me neither. I'm sure it could be both. It was such a long time ago.
We'll never know.
Was the queen of the Iceni tribe who resided in East Anglia. And she was done wrong by the Romans.
Quite brutally so.
Yeah, it was pretty gruesome.
I believe she was raped or her daughters were raped?
One or the other, or possibly both.
Publicly humiliated, and she wanted to seek vengeance, as you bloody well would.
Yeah, and so she rallied her tribe, probably other tribes as well, and advanced on and managed to sack and raise London to the ground. By way of
Colchester, which was... actually the foremost Roman town at that time.
The main city, yeah.
So after...
London was, if anything, at that point, the kind of, I guess, like trading hub?
Trading and military kind of thing. So she actually, it's almost like she hits the capital, Colchester, and after she's sacked Colchester, she goes...
let's carry this party on!
Yeah, let's hit Londinium up. Archaeologists discovered underneath the Bank of England in that area, when they were doing some digging... literal digging, there is a layer of burnt clay, which is called Boudica's layer, because they believe it's from a hangover from then. I mean, it's literally
burnt the whole place
where
down.
She burnt London to the ground. So I think I'm correct in saying that.
Yeah, no, I've heard that.
Boudica's layer. Is it layer?
Yeah, I guess it's because it's a layer of earth.
Layer of earth, yeah.
She's not living down
charred
there.
Charred and burnt earth that holds the secrets of history.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, let's crack on with the Roman narrative, because they did manage to overcome that hiccup.
But just important to point out that London was sacked so early.
Yeah, and that those tribes that were displaced by the arrival of this imperial force were proactively... pissed off.
Yeah.
And you know, there were efforts to challenge it, and this was still a bubble, a little Roman bubble in an otherwise rather large country occupied by people who have been there for many
I think it's quite interesting as well that the tribes that existed in Britain before the Romans came along accepted female rule. Mm-hmm. And we think of the Romans as so progressive and so civilized, but actually they didn't. There were no female empresses of Rome.
Yeah. Patriarchal society.
Yeah.
Yeah, so back to London, Roman London as it's developing.
Or Londinium, we should say.
Yes, they would have been calling it, or they called it. They wrote it down, and which is why we kind of have our name. There's a possibility that London was known as something similar to that by the native tribes who lived there, the Britons. But... the first people to write it down are the Romans, and they call it Londinium. And so that's where we kind of get the root of our name, certainly. And by kind of 80 AD, let's give people a date stamp finally.
Yep.
By 80 AD, you've got some pretty significant Roman buildings. There's a forum, which is a very large kind of market meeting area with kind of municipal government buildings surrounding it.
Right.
That's actually on the site, if you know Leadenhall Market in the City of London, beautiful covered market.
Yeah.
That is where so you would have found
the
forum. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've also got an amphitheatre where they would have staged entertainments and events.
Mm-hmm.
That is under where the Guildhall now stands. There was also, significantly, probably most significantly, they built the first London Wall to enclose the city and provide us with a perimeter that is pretty much still the outline of the City of London, the square mile today.
That was them marking their territory, really, wasn't it?
Defending themselves.
Throw up a big old wall so everyone else stays out.
Yeah. And they established the, obviously within a wall, you had to have gates to get in and out of the city. You had five original gates. Ludgate, Newgate, Cripplegate, Bishop's Gate, which was... and Aldgate, that's five, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, you got them.
So those are the original five.
All of which still exist in place names today.
In place
Cripplegate?
Names,
yeah. So still a Cripplegate?
I think so.
Yeah.
So Newgate became the prison because they would have used gatehouses as jails. Newgate became or grew into the biggest and most ominous prison in London's history, arguably. But you also had a road network that led out from those gates and spread out across the country. Newgate, the one we just discussed, that was the one through which Watling Street passed.
Right. So talk to me about Watling Street, because it's often considered Watling Street to be the sort of quintessential Roman London road, but it starts at Dover, does it?
Dover, yeah, and goes all the way up north and west of the country to the kind of border with Wales.
And in London, where do you find Watling Street? Is it London Bridge becomes Watling Street, doesn't
it? I don't
it?
Think it's called Watling. Is it still
There
called?
Is still a
is
section.
Is there maybe a little section?
There's probably a tiny nod. Wee section.
Yeah, I can believe that, but I'm not sure about the kind of extent of it.
We shall endeavour to find out.
Yeah. Further research required.
When we get round to specifically talking about London roads.
Yes. But we've got a road system that's set up and that kind of radiates out from our city or our London, surrounded by a wall and the different gates that that are within it. So that's our Roman city.
Yeah, the Romans kind of... lay the foundations.
They lay the foundations.
To coin a phrase I don't think anyone's ever used for London.
They lay the foundations, absolutely. And the Romans are in London for a few hundred years. But in 410 AD, the Romans abruptly withdraw from the city.
Why do they do that?
They do that because the Western Roman Empire is failing somewhat, and they're looking to consolidate other possessions that they have in Europe.
Right, so let it go.
Yeah,
let Britain go, because we've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, not a priority. And there's an edict that...
I've got the edict. Should I read the edict?
You've had the edict through on the wire.
Read the edict.
Please do.
For the security of his possessions in Gaul, Italy, and Spain, the emperor... How do you say that?
The emperor at the time was... Honorius. Yeah.
For the security of his possessions in Gaul, Italy, and Spain, the emperor renounces the imperial claim over Britain. Its counties and garrisons are forthwith independent and should fall to their own defences.
Just like that.
So, bang.
And the dirt is gone.
You guys, mic drop, you guys look after yourself. It's kind of Brexit in reverse.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Europe leaving us.
Yeah. We were part of this big imperial bloc, and they ditched us, which meant that you had a city full of people who would have, you know, moved there or been living there for hundreds of years under that form of ownership government.
Because you had original Britons, if there is such a thing.
Still would have been.
Mixed with people from across the Roman Empire.
Yeah, definitely.
We'll come to the makeup of the city a bit later, but it's so the Romans withdraw and
but
then
this power vacuum, yeah.
And then what of Londinium after the Romans are no longer there?
They still would have traded. They still would have lived. I mean,
I'm sure, there was a faction of people who really enjoyed it.
I imagine the upkeep must have gone.
The Wicked Witch is dead. Everyone party.
Yeah, definitely. You surely. London, I think, actually had some uprisings against Roman rule in the period leading up to it. So there was an appetite for their departure.
Right.
Probably so agitated. It
wasn't some old kind of ghost town.
No. I'm sorry to not be able to satisfy that very...
I just have this idea
poetic
of
image in your head.
Of like the merging of the Wild West, you know, those old towns and, uh-huh. you know, in spaghetti westerns that are abandoned, you know, but that still have people living there, but like a Roman version. The centurion with no name, kind of like doing benevolent things for the people who are left.
And, who got left behind when the boats shipped off.
Yeah, and the tavern signs swinging in the silence. There's a game in there somewhere.
It's a very cool, at least kind of like graphic novel, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could picture it. All right, so the next characters that come along in our story, because Romans have said, I'm out, we don't need this no more, are the Saxons.
Yes.
A group that I'm sure people have heard about.
But remind us who they are.
So the Saxons come from modern day Northern Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a seafaring... They would have done some seafaring to get over to us, for sure.
Yeah.
Quite as seafaring as other characters, but they're from modern day Northern Germany, and they come to England and they set up...
Britain.
And they set up a market or trading space to the west of the old Roman walled city. And they call this place Londonwick. And Londonwick means... trading post.
So the suffix wick means trading.
Yeah, exactly. And the London bit has carried on.
Mm-hmm.
The old city is...
Roman city.
Yeah, the old Roman fortified city is no longer used as a kind of significant space, or it kind of falls out of priority, I suppose. Although there is some talk that it was... some of the administrative buildings were still being used.
The Saxons.
Yeah, they had meetings. They had something called a folk moot, which was where they got together to discuss issues. And
so the Saxon folk moot is the kind of precursor for arguably Parliament.
Like, you know, a Parliament.
It's a bunch of the elders in the society mm-hmm. talking about how to govern. So whereas Roman rule was a bit more like, right, the bosses say what's up.
Yeah.
The folk moot is more democratic.
Yeah. So they established that, and you're seeing that happening in London using some of those old buildings. In this period, we also see south of England, because the north of England at this point is quite wild, become a Christian...
Said with love.
A Christian nation. When Augustine... who's a monk.
The monk.
Gets sent to Rome, to England, Britain, by the Pope.
From Rome.
And it's on this mission that he manages to convert the Saxon tribes to Christianity as opposed to their previously pagan beliefs. Now, that's going to have a pretty profound effect on some of the, certainly the architecture of this great city.
Just to go back, I have a question.
Yes.
Any idea why the Saxons chose not to revamp Londinium as their settlement? And they chose to go... So Londonwick is established pretty much where the Strand, Covent Garden-y area is.
Yes, that's right.
I wonder why they didn't.
Why did they pitch up to the west?
Yeah.
It's an interesting one to speculate on. I like the idea... that they arrived, they saw old, or at least at that point, I think they arrived about 50 years later than the Romans' departure. Anyway, I think by that point, things would have been looking a bit shabby and maybe even a bit haunted.
Ooh, now, okay, so now you're reneging on
me. I told you I enjoy speculating.
The ghost, the old Roman ghost town.
Well, you know, you think about the experience of this highly superstitious society.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, there's probably bad juju
associated
with this dilapidated Roman city.
You row down the river, sail down the river, whatever they were doing, and you look to your right as you're coming in from the Thames estuary, and you see this old city.
Crumbling walls.
Yeah, it might not have been that bad, but like, you know, just like, and there's probably a bad energy about that. And I like to think that they were like, we're not just going to repopulate that space. We're going to create a new space that is free of any of those associations.
I like that. You heard it here first. The Saxons did not settle in Londinium because of the bad energy associated with it. It's a very modern principle, actually.
I wonder if there's any sources that would completely
The feng shui
refute.
Is all off. We should go down the river a bit.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the Strand is a lovely part of town.
It's very beautiful. I'm sure there was many lovely moorings.
Also, I think there was because it was more beachy at that time. There would have been a sort of... whereas because of Londinium's establishment, it would have been more port and docky, perhaps.
I seem to remember reading something to that effect as well, that it was like a convenient docking area. Yeah. Anyway, the Saxon period of London, Londonwick, lasts for a few hundred years, and we start to see some quite significant developments in London as an area.
What do we see?
Well, we see areas or farmsteads cropping up.
Yes.
A lot of them, actually, around this central hub, which is Londonwick. And we know these farmsteads, or we know them as they are today, by their place name endings.
The suffixes.
The suffixes, exactly. And these examples are places with ham at the end, or ton,
right,
or witch, or worth. All of those are Saxon suffixes. And so if you've got a place with that at the end, that was originally a Saxon settlement.
So that's the establishment of the suburbs. That's...
Yeah, the
centres. Wandsworth, it's Dulwich, it's... What were the other ones?
Ham.
Ham. Well, there's just ham.
There is.
full ham. Yeah.
Dalston.
Dalston, yeah.
Dalston.
We've got... What's a north one?
Dalston.
Isn't that more east?
It's northeast.
Northeast, right.
But you want to go far north. Newington. That's just north of Dalston.
Yeah, Newington. Yeah, that's good.
Stoke Newington. And then, like, I can't even think of any.
Hang on, let me think on. We got sidetracked.
We've gotten fully sidetracked.
As we're likely to do in this podcast.
Yeah.
London's a big topic.
There's a lot to talk about. Anyway, the point is that we're starting to see some of the units... geographical units that we recognize today established really early on in this Saxon period. At the time, they would have been farmsteads out in the middle of bloody nowhere.
Yeah, it would have been a horse and cart ride away.
And days, you're talking to get from some of these areas. I mean,
they could still walk, man.
The roads were bad, though. Okay, maybe not days.
And no, that's a fair point,
but
actually.
The ground.
There would have been no... It wouldn't have been a clear path, you know. You would have had to fight through forest to get down to...
And marshland. There was
Crystal Palace.
There was a lot of marshland, actually. They had to drain so much of the areas around London to actually make it habitable. I think it would have been hard going to get from...
To the farmsteads.
Let's say Fulham to Londonwick.
Fair play.
Yeah. But this is... Yeah, it's interesting to note that that's something that we start to see emerging in this period. It's also relevant that at this time, we had a number of different Saxon kingdoms, if you will.
Right, so this is complex.
Yeah, this
something
is complex.
That the Mercians and the
Wessex.
Wessex,
yeah.
Right.
You don't have a unified English British kingdom, you have a bunch of different kingdoms. And so London, because it is a very unique standout place and example of
commercial might,
it is the thing that people want to get their hands on, and it kind of lives by its own rules,
which again is sort of thematic for us in the notion of London living by its own rules.
Absolutely.
Just keeps coming back as you go through its history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they start to become, you know, enshrined eventually, and that's stuff that we still see the legacy of today.
London's almost always sort of desired autonomy. So this battle for London, as it were, mm-hmm. or like the shifting
kingdoms, over a few hundred years, we should know,
is kind of distress, no, that's the wrong word. The chaos is doubled down upon by a new kind of character in the story of London,
yeah.
The Vikings.
Mm.
So the Vikings were very much a seafaring people.
They were a seafaring people. They absolutely were. That
and
was
they're from
thing.
Present-day Scandinavia.
Yeah.
And they spread themselves about in this period, and they managed their raids on London. Eventually were came good, and they managed to take over London Wick.
Yeah, they were regularly raiding London and the coast. And London, as we described, was a real prize, and they knew that, and they wanted a piece. And on a number of occasions managed to actually occupy the city. And that's when we start to see the introduction of Viking peoples or Norse people into London's demographics, should you say.
It's not a quiet life being a Londoner at this time, is it?
No. In fact, it's hectic.
Who's the bloody hell's in charge now?
Yeah. / here comes another band of Viking raiders down up the Thames.
Shit.
Literally. It must
Run
have been
to your hovels.
Horrifying. But apparently the people of London were pretty aggressive themselves.
I can believe it.
Armed to the teeth and ready to take on invading forces of their
Personally.
Own initiative.
Well, you would be after, you know,
yeah,
all
living
those
that
years
existence.
Of the sliding plates of power. You know, you think.
Yeah, yeah. So London's were kind of almost a like militia, the people themselves, and they would sometimes manage to throw back Viking invasion.
It's probably because of that that we see a bit later when London has a new ruler. There are sort of a special kind of rules for the Londoners. They and their businesses are sort of not affected. They're not touched. It's kind of, it starts by being an unsaid rule and then it goes into law. It's like when, well, I don't want to jump the gun, but we'll see someone come in who's like, actually, okay, I'm taking over, but I'm leaving you Londoners alone because I don't want to risk your wrath.
Because you're an intimidating, militarized bunch of...
Exactly.
Yeah, so this is the Saxon period and the incursion of Vikings, and they do manage to take over a few times. But let's resurface when a guy called Alfred the Great is earning his nickname.
Oh, yeah. 886
is the year, yeah. And Alfred the Great retakes London after a period of Viking occupation.
Alfred was a Saxon king.
Yeah, Saxon king. So Alfred the Great in 886 boots the Vikings out.
Woo!
And he makes a big call when he does that because he decides to resettle London in the old walled city that those Romans left behind all those years ago.
So he didn't mind about the bad juju.
Apparently for him, it wasn't as big a deal as it had been for his hundreds of years ago ancestors.
Yeah.
We're talking ancestors at this stage.
Yes.
So Alfred the Great resettles the old city and rebuilds the walls, refortifies it, turns it into a proper, you know, town again, forsaking the old kind of hub of London Wick. And the name of London Wick has passed into history because at that point, when it got moved out of, it became known as Old Wick, which means old town, old port,
which is
now Aldwych. Exactly.
Cool.
So
I like that.
That's awesome, isn't it? Mm-hmm. There it is. So we've re-established London in the old Roman city, and what we're seeing there is an establishment that we're going to now take as London from now on. Like London, the city of, is and has meant the same thing ever since then.
Because Alfred doubles down on what the Romans.
Yeah, the Romans
out.
Established it, but then we kind of, it was maybe, we had a bit of a wilderness period, the square mile. But now we're back, and London is London again.
Except
as we know it.
Londonburg this time.
Yes, absolutely.
The suffix burg or burr, meaning...
Borough.
Yeah.
Or gives us the root of our word borough.
Alfred is a funny one. Alfred is basically the first gentrifier.
How do you mean?
By taking an area that was, you know, a bit smelly, bit out of fashion, and he's sort of new and improves. He goes in there and he's like, you know what? This has got great potential.
Yeah.
Everyone, come and live here.
And it's in the east as well. So That adds even more layers to the gentrifying point.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you could say that.
And he had a big beard, you know, so.
Okay, so Alfred the Gentrifier, you heard it here first. And we've moved back into the city.
The other thing that Alfred does is establish a garrison over the old wooden London Bridge in the Southwark.
Mm.
Southwark.
Southwark. The start of Southwark.
So even though the Romans had a sort of military presence there, again, it's Alfred that uses the blueprint of what the Romans had and just advances it, takes it further. And yeah. So this is the beginning of Southwark as we know it.
Really. Yeah, laying the foundations again.
Laying the foundations is such a good phrase we've come up with.
I think we might have to use it more.
Yeah, we should write books.
One day. So Southwark gets established, and then also we're seeing the establishment of another very prominent thing in this period.
Are we?
Yeah.
We're talking about...
It's the early 11th century.
Okay.
Very early 11th century.
And one of Alfred's descendants, mm-hmm. Edward the Confessor,
yes,
decides not to establish himself or not to make his base in Londonburgs, mm-hmm. Londonburg, mm. not to make his base in Aldwych, but to go even further west to a sort of small monastery on a little island in the Thames called Thorny Island.
He's a real pioneer like that.
And he establishes his Westminster.
Yes, which means big church. Minster.
In the west.
Just means big church.
The notion that Westminster was at one point an island is so difficult to fathom, and yet there is a street that sort of bears its legacy. I think maybe there's a Thorny Street.
Is there?
I think I should look
that
up.
That would make sense, but it gets to the heart of the old topography of London as being kind of covered with little rivulets and openings into the river and things like
that. One of my passions, and the lost rivers of London, the many lost rivers of London, of which we will have to do an episode.
Yeah.
So Edward the Confessor founds Westminster.
Yes.
And so we now have a new area of London, which effectively to us is a second centre.
Yeah.
We see the establishment of the religious and sort of ceremonial Westminster versus the commercial, money-driven city. And that's a... What's the word I'm looking for?
It's a contrast.
It's a contrast which still very much exists today.
Yeah, absolutely. London almost, you feel, has two centres. Westminster, as you described exactly, political or religious at the time, but those two things become very heavily intertwined. And then the commercial city, the square mile. Those two places, those two centres still exist today in the imagination.
In the hearts and minds of us all.
And that's established at this point by Edward the Confessor and his decision to kind of go west. Go west.
Go west like the Confessor did. So we have done the first 1,000 years.
Oh my word.
Well, wasn't that a doddle? We should take stock of
where we're at. Because over 1,000 years, and obviously that's a huge span of time, but if you take our narrative, you've had indigenous British people, those tribes that we were talking about.
Celts. We're not using the word Celts.
Yeah, interchangeable terms. Britons, Celts. To that we have added Romans, which is a massive spread. The Roman Empire covered most of Europe, the Mediterranean, parts of North Africa, and you would have had migration from those areas to London. After that, we saw the Saxons coming in, then the Vikings, of course, from kind of Scandinavia, and these guys would have settled down, all of these different groups. So by 1066, you've got a population of the city as the hub of this country, which would have been, in its own way, very diverse.
Very multicultural.
A multicultural space.
Wow.
Which, again, is a legacy that I think we can all agree is still alive and well today.
I agree. Let's take a tea break.
Yeah, let's.